Hi, today is March 24th, 2024. This is Holy Podcast 503. I'm Todd Ogasawara with my good friend, the co-founder, John Small. Good as always.
Yes. Try to be. Well, at least as far as anyone knows.
Yes.
If I'm bad, nobody finds out.
No. That's a mystery. So we collectively have had a couple of... Well, let me back up. I started using Adobe Podcast Studio Beta, I think last summer, like August. And for the most part, it's been really great. I really like the fact that I can do it anywhere. I don't need any special software to record because it's a cloud-based recording, allegedly. and its AI voice enhancement is spectacular. I should note that there's also Adobe Podcast Enhance, which is part of the podcast constellation of components that you can run on, you know, your own audio recorded, like with what we're going to do today. But at any rate, I've really enjoyed using it. It's had some issues. We've had a couple times where it's like, didn't record John for 15 minutes and I had to do a 1940 style baseball recap, you know, with sound effects. I became a Foley artist.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of podcasts ago, I think it was 501, it didn't record Don Sorcinelli at all, much to Don's disappointment and ours. Yeah. And I was able to recover it. I brought it into Audacity to edit and got rid of the blank spaces where Don was talking and created a mostly reasonable podcast, except for the part where we would ask Don something or we would respond to something Don said, and it was like we're talking to a ghost. It was like a you know, LLM hallucination, except it was a real person that was actually talking. So we went back to using Microsoft Teams for our audio-video conferencing, and I'm using a product called Audio Hijack from a company called Rogue Amoeba, which I've used for well over a decade until I started using Adobe Podcast Studio. So we're back to that, and it seems to be working okay. But I really like the idea of web-based podcasting. So while Adobe Podcast Team fixes their issues, and I have some, confidence in their service, we've gone back to this. And I'm also looking at some other web-based podcast recording services. One, which John and I just tried for a couple of minutes, is called, this combination, Descript, bought a web-based podcasting service called Squadcast, I think within the last 6 months. And so now they can provide not just web-based editing of podcasts and solo, you know, in-person kind of stuff, but also if you do a remote, you can use Squadcast. And John and I just tried it, and it was not a disaster, but it was very confusing. It was just a lot of clicks and clucks, and mostly on my side. I think for John, it wasn't too bad. And next I'm going to try Riverside.fm, which has been around a long time, and I've heard about it and I've watched their videos because they have a lot of good tips and tutorials, even if you don't use their service, that are very useful in terms of microphones and things like that. So, I'm going to try that. And John, you're using something. What are you using?
Yeah, I use right now what's called Spotify for Podcasters. Spotify bought a platform named Anchor.fm about a year ago or a little over a year ago.
Yeah.
And Anchor, I like it because it's pretty good for solo podcasts, and they have a feature where people can leave voice messages that you can then play on the podcast. Uh-huh. So it works well for my students. And I do believe they have a feature for collaborative podcasting, but it doesn't... I don't think it supports video. It only supports audio, at least what I've seen with it.
Like Adobe.
But for hosting a small podcast and hosting it on, not having to worry about hosting because it's free hosting, it's not a bad little option in there. But it has little interludes you can add in. You can edit very easily. And it does say you can invite friends to join when you do a recording. So that is another option that we could try at
this point. Let's do that.
I've been pretty happy with.
Yeah. Let's try them all. I mean, you know, we'll... And by try them, I think I'm too hesitant to try a whole podcast using these things right now. But you know, John has been very kind to indulge me in, prior to the podcast, you know, doing these 3 to 5 minute tests. Although I think the script Squadcast cost us like 10 minutes to get started, but that's I thought the interface was really confusing. You know, I sent him a link earlier, like yesterday, and when I clicked on the link, it says, well, you created it, so you can't join it. And I didn't see it anywhere in my Descript or Squadcast UI. So maybe the link is ephemeral, only lasts, you know, 24 hours.
Well, I think what the link did was it actually allowed me to collaborate with you. Like, it gave me access to your drive and those sorts of things.
See.
So that's nice for frequent collaboration.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as easy to understand that there was guests that you were inviting in. Maybe you always have to do that through the actual, when you start up a new episode.
And to be fair, you know, I've only looked at it briefly yesterday and sent John a test link. So, and there is a scheduling thing, so you can schedule a podcast from what I can see. So we'll give it another try. I also need to figure out what it is that you can do for free versus pay. I think it's like $14 or $15 a month if you want to go beyond whatever free gives you, which includes, I think, on-device recording, you know, separate channel recording that you can combine later, which is great, you know, so you shouldn't lose anything. I should note that I already paid $100. I decided after, believe it or not, after the disaster with 501, where we lost Don's track, I thought, you know, I don't want to edit audio manually again. It's just a lot of work. And I do like Adobe Podcast Enhance's service, but I think you're limited to like 20 minutes or 2 20-minute segments a day or something like that. And since our podcast tend to run longer than that, you know, 40 minutes, longer than 40, even splitting it wouldn't fix that problem. So I spent my $100 a year, and I have access to Adobe Express Premium, which is different from Creative Cloud, which is way expensive. So this is $100 a year, and the Adobe Express Premium is actually kind of interesting. So I feel like I'll get my money's worth. And like I said, I'll toss this audio right into it, and we will, you know, we'll see how that goes when we do that. I'm just trying to figure out if I'm recording in WAV or in MP3 today. Looks like MP3. We'll figure it out. And it can handle both.
Well, we'll say that you made a wise decision with Adobe, and it wasn't just Stockholm Syndrome or some other, you know, strange reason why you purchased it. But there are a lot of options today. And the manual audio editing, not exactly the most fun thing unless you really, really enjoy it.
I know, and I don't. You know, I guess if you're an audio engineer, you might, and I am not. I am, at best, a wannabe. All righty. So those are the things we're looking at. I'm hoping Adobe Podcast team gets their product together. I should note it is in beta. Podcast Studio is beta. So, hey, you know, when you beta test, it's not going to be perfect. In fact, even when it's production, it's not perfect. So I understand that, and we'll give them some time. Okay, some things that aren't, well, one thing that it doesn't have a lot of time left is Google Podcasts. Both the app that lets you listen to podcasts as a consumer, and Google Podcasts, the distribution method, which end of life's on April 4th. So kind of sad. I really, you know, I don't know if many people subscribe to us via Google Podcast. I never did really look at the stats much. But I did like their app. Google Podcast app for Android especially, I thought was quite good. And I'm going to miss it. I switched to something which I think is inferior, so I won't mention its name. But it's got good ratings from other people on Android and on iPhone. I don't use the... So they don't have a native app for Android anymore. I mean, from Google. You have to use a third party. And I will mention what I use on my iPhone or iOS, iPadOS device, and that's Overcast, which is free, as far as I can tell. Used to be a volunteer payment, but I think it's free now. You know, I've been reviewing a lot of gadgets. It's one thing I wanted to mention, something that actually I probably would not have tried had not John convinced me that thermal label printers were awesome, and they are. And in fact, they're so awesome that I decided to try a thermal printer or review a thermal printer. I should note I didn't pay for it. It is a review unit. It doesn't do labels. It does full 8.5 by 11, you know, document pages. You do need to use thermal paper. You know, obviously it's a thermal printer, no ink. Interesting couple of quirks, by the way. So quirk number one, not a quirk, it's by design. You can only print on one side. You know, thermal printers, you need to have a surface that is sensitive to its burn. And so it only prints on one side. And in fact, the back of the paper has a permanently inked thing that says this side up, because you basically feed the paper in upside down. So the thing that prints is on the bottom from our perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so when it comes out, you still see a blank sheet except for this side up, which is, you know, kind of funny, because normally on a printer you say, oh, yeah, stuff is printing and it's coming out and you're kind of, you know, pretty happy. The other thing I noticed is that it's so far, I've printed about 4 pages. It came with 10 free sheets with the, and it's really, the print quality is really inconsistent. And maybe I took a photo of it side by side with the standard inkjet output to give an example of that. And the third thing that really floored me, or not floored me, but just, you know, I found interesting, was printing the same document, in this case a Word document, from a PC or Mac compared to an iPhone using the app that you have to load an iPhone. The print quality is not only different, but the typeface font is smaller when you print from an iPhone. And I can't figure that out at all. Yeah, same printer, same paper, same document, different device printing. So that was sort of interesting. And the other thing is, and again, this is not a disappointment. It's just a note if you're going to use thermal printer for 8.5 by 11 documents. You know, so who was it? Was it Sven maybe when we were talking about earlier? Or maybe you was mentioning that, hey, you know, thermal paper print fades over time. And I said, well, you know, the labels that you and I've been printing, they've been, I don't know if they're going to be permanent, but they haven't been fading. And I've had my thermal printer for well over a year now, I think, or maybe a year. And, you know, I've looked at the labels that I printed with, and they all look great. So, but the manufacturer of the 8.5 by 11 printer does say that thermal print does fade. And, you know, so I wouldn't print a contract on it, because at the end, the only thing that will be left is ink from your signature, if you mean a contract or some other legally binding document. That said, it's really interesting, and it's battery operated. And it also has Bluetooth, so you can print either from a USB cable plugged into a PC or Mac, or you can print from an Android or iPhone or iPad using Bluetooth. So, interesting experiment. I may go spend $20 on a ream of 100 pages, not even 500 sheets. So, you know, 100 sheets of paper for $20, a little pricey, but I think it's an interesting experiment. And it's kind of nice to have a backup printer to my, you know, my evil, unnamed, starts with a H, ends with a P printer that may brick me someday because I use third-party ink. So there you go. It's not, as also, it's not super fast. And like I said, you can't double side print. So really 100 sheets is 100 pages. Whereas you can get, you know, from 100 sheets of regular paper, you get 200 pages of print. Okay. So that's that. I should also note, you know, I haven't really tested it yet, but I did get the recently released in the U.S. Logitech Casa, which I guess is like house in Spanish. And it's an interesting heavy-duty accessory for notebooks, where it's a notebook stand, comes with a Bluetooth keyboard and a Bluetooth touchpad, all in a really nice case, real nice hard shell case. And it's supposed to give you a more ergonomic setup because, you know, your screen is higher, you're not craning your neck down. And the keyboard seems pretty decent. It's not a mechanical keyboard, which I've become addicted to. And you know, it's but I found the idea of using a touchpad instead of a mouse as part of the kit was interesting. I'm not a huge touchpad fan, but I'm willing to give Logitech's touchpad a whirl. And it's got some software so you can create macros and stuff. So I'll be fussing with that over the next week, I think. It's one of the things I'll be looking at. Okay, things I wanted to get John's opinion on. First of all, neither John is really, really smart, but neither of us are attorneys. And I don't think you're trained in law. I was not for sure.
Nope.
But, you know, we follow things Apple. And so the U.S. Department of Justice has a monopoly lawsuit against Apple, claiming they're a monopoly. Again, not an attorney. I don't see how they can be a monopoly when I see Android phones all over the place. And even a few flip phones of, you know, undetermined operating systems. Well, that's A. And I think part of it, if I remember reading correctly, part of it is somebody mentioned, I didn't read the lawsuit itself, but somebody wrote that they're also in the DOJ monopoly lawsuit, they're claiming that Microsoft's Windows mobile Windows phones downfall was because of the iPhone. I think John has a similar opinion. And, you know, John and I were we're not employees of Microsoft, but we were sort of these enthusiasts that they invited for non-disclosure meetings and so forth. And we spent a lot of years up there in Redmond, in Bellevue, getting deep dives with the development team and the product team. I'm pretty sure Microsoft caused their own downfall.
And, you know, my opinion of the Apple lawsuit in general is that the DOJ figured this was a good time to strike. Apple recently has had some issues, especially with the EU and yep. the EU requiring them to do certain things.
Yep.
And it was, well, there's chinks in the armor. Maybe we, you know, and quite honestly, the thing that is infuriating as an Apple user is that the EU will demand something and Apple will say, okay, we will do that. But most of the time, just in the EU. We're not going to, and this anywhere else outside that we're not legally required to.
Right.
And I suspect that if they had said, well, if we have to build this in for the EU, then I guess everyone's going to get it. I doubt the DOJ would have been as interested in saying something, maybe, you know, it's sort of like, hey, if you're going to admit that there are these issues, you can't just admit they're only issues in one part of the world.
Right.
And if you're found in a court that it was an issue, then it's an issue. But
yeah.
That being said, a lot of Apple's success does come from the fact that, as you and I found out when we switched and started using Apple products or used Android products over Windows Mobile, there were things that bothered us for many, many years on Windows Mobile. It just didn't happen on Android or iOS.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to get out of the habit of double tapping the call end button. Because on Windows Mobile, sometimes if you hit call end, it didn't actually end the call. The response would be, would be gated somewhere. And so I'd have to click it a couple of times.
I forgot about that.
The same thing with going from Android to Apple and Apple over to Android occasionally is that you see things that you just go, well, why didn't they fix this? And Apple, for the most part, did fix most of those. There are still some things that I look at on iOS and go, boy, I could do this on Windows Mobile 20 years ago. Or I had a dumb phone that could do this 20 years ago. Why does my smartphone not have this ability?
Yeah.
But there are very few of those. There's only a few I can think of, even top of my head. So I don't think that Apple destroyed Windows Phone.
No.
I do think that what a lot of us saw, you know, the first or second generation of the iPhone, we were very intrigued because it didn't have some of those same annoyances that we had gotten used to in our devices. And we sort of hoped that Microsoft would take a page out of that book, especially with the updates. The update thing was the thing that always was so much better on the iPhone side because they demanded control over their updates. They didn't allow the carrier
to
piecemeal and decide when you got an update and if you got an update. But I'll be curious to see how this plays out. Ultimately, I don't think this is going to make Apple happy corporate citizen that gives it away to all of their competitors and facilitates everyone being able to do anything they want on their platform. Really, really doubt that's going to happen. But it wouldn't surprise me if we start to see a little bit of more open operability and a little bit more repair options. Apple knew that this was coming, as the reason why I think they started offering more repair options and switched to USB-C.
Right.
Worldwide instead of Lightning. But, you know, these things happen. DOJ sees that it can maybe get some stuff done. And it is an election year, so, you know, splashy might, you know, help make an argument that they're doing something for those taxpayers that are going to be voting in November.
Yeah. And, you know, I should know, when did the Windows Mobile or Windows Phone MVP program end? I'm thinking 2000. 2010, 2011.
So 10 or 11. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been well over a decade since we're under non-disclosure. And I'm going to guess that nobody really cares. And I don't think I'm going to say that anything's under NDA, but I will say this. This is my thought. Not, I think John agrees, and our fellow ex-MVPs agree, is that Microsoft, I think Microsoft's upper management limited the Windows Mobile / Windows Phone development teams from really exercising some creative chops because they didn't want to cannibalize their PC and laptop market.
That wouldn't be too surprising.
And, you know, one of the evidences of that to me was their refusal or the difficulty, let's say, in getting their Office Mobile components up to par, where, for example, we didn't have round tripping between documents on mobile and desktop for like years and years and years. And, you know, that was something we begged for. Internet Explorer browser, despite being called, you know, IE whatever matching what was on a desktop, was just a toy. It was sort of a joke browser, and it was really difficult to, we really couldn't see desktop web pages in any fidelity. It was just a lot of things like that. I was like, or even just fixing Bluetooth to work,
yeah.
You know, or even synchronizing, you know, never mind just Office, it's documents, but just calendar and email and stuff like that, that just, you know, over the air syncing, once the phones came out at least, or even, you know, when Wi-Fi CF cards became available on Windows Mobile devices. Just made it very, very difficult to use and to use the phone as a collaborative device. You know, I should back up by saying I really, really enjoyed using Windows Mobile. You know, starting in 1997, 1 year after it was launched, getting the first handheld PCs and stuff. And that's why we were MVPs. We really loved the platform. But as time went on, it became obvious that, you know, something was stifling their innovation and ability to really make the product not just competitive, because iPhone didn't exist yet, but make the product something that was undeniably the best solution for mobile, which it could have been, in my opinion, especially when they had both handheld PCs and, you know, palm-sized PCs or pocket PCs, as it was later called. I thought the handheld PCs were brilliant. This predated netbooks and things by years. But at any rate, enough ranting.
Yeah, well, we'll see what goes, what comes of this. Nothing, maybe something.
I should notice, before we close out on that topic, in that Business Insider notes that Walt Mossberg, in the former, let's see, Wall Street Journal tech columnist, was on, I think, Threads, and was saying basically, well, this is Walt Mossberg, who's saying that the DOJ's claim of Apple monopoly is laughable, which is pretty much what we were saying. You know, it's just, you know, there are, I think Android phones far outnumber and percentage-wise far more, but anyway. Okay, you have another rant.
Yeah, well, I have an interesting one. This comes from NBC News, and the headline is, fewer people are using Elon Musk's X as the platform struggles to attract and keep users, according to analysts. And so, you know, the downfall of Twitter has been forecasted many, many, many times.
Yeah.
And you could just have a podcast devoted to the death of Twitter and just have episodes for the last 10 years going, it's going to happen. It's going to happen tomorrow, we swear. But if you look at, and they have an interesting graph in this where they're looking at change in daily U.S. app uses since November 2022. And goes in percentages. And if you look, you know, TikTok is going down by about 10%. That's not too surprising,
really?
Because of what, you know, being in the news and being in the fact that there are actual states that are banning it or making it very hard to access. For example, the state that I live in, Mississippi, it is not allowed to, any piece of networking equipment owned by the state cannot transmit TikTok.
Oh, really? And I didn't know that.
Yes. Yeah, our college students, they have to use their cell data if they want to use TikTok. They cannot use the campus Wi-Fi because it's state property.
Right.
So that doesn't surprise me too much. And, Instagram's a little down 4%. Facebook is down about 0.6. Snapchat's down about 1%. But Twitter, since November of 2022, is down 22%, which is quite a bit higher.
And, or lower.
That's one thing. Yeah, that is one thing that makes you sort of wonder if perhaps it really is decreasing. Of course, in November 2022, you didn't have to be signed into Twitter in order to use it. Now you do. You cannot just browse anonymously. And one of my favorite lines in this entire piece is that let me see what here, because it is it's sort of funny how Musk or Elon Musk has decided the problem is there it is. Yes. In recent days, Musk has urged his 177 million followers on X to get more people onto the platform. On Sunday, he posted instructions for how to share posts with Brent, a basic function of social media. Please send links from this platform to your friends who are still being misled by the legacy media, he wrote in a separate post on Sunday. Now, one could argue Twitter, X, whatever, has been around long enough that it is legacy media compared to the other ones in that graph that have come newer to it.
Yeah.
But I really like the idea that it's just people have forgotten how to share posts.
Well,
that's his belief.
This reminds me of when, Steve Jobs, the late, great Steve Jobs, I think it was the iPhone 4 that, some people were complaining that they're getting dropped calls and blah, blah, blah. And he said, you're holding it wrong. You remember that? You're holding the iPhone wrong. And that's why you're getting dropped calls. Now, that may or may not have been true, but it sure sounded like it was a design error and not so much my problem.
Yes, a design error on God's part when he designed your hand.
That's right.
If your hand had been designed differently,
yeah,
then you would have held it properly.
Yeah, or with less water to block the RF. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would have had drier, bonier hands that would allow RF to penetrate it better. So, there it is.
Speaking of RF, I was thinking about this RF. There's a tangent that we don't have in the doc. I have a fancier sport coat that I bought a few months ago, and it has an RFID blocking pocket for your passport. Being that you can put your passport in it.
That's a good idea.
It's exactly where you'd want to put your phone. So if you screw up and you put your phone in the RFID blocking pocket, your phone loses instant connection with the world. So I guess it's also really good if you need to go off the grid and not be traceable. You can throw your electronics in that pocket.
Without turning it off. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. But that is the perils of technology sometimes.
Yeah. And, in Hawaii, at least, I do see people wearing coats, and I'm worried about their mental health. But in 80-degree weather, to me, this does not seem wise. But the only coats I own are when I used to travel to the mainland or elsewhere. And in Hawaii, I can't remember the last time I wore a coat. Oh, wait, I know, when I got married.
There you go.
That was it.
Well, we have to remember that, again, this is when you tell everyone that you're upset about battery shipping limitations to Hawaii. This is why they don't feel sorry for you.
Well, they should. We have our own issues. I will note, one thing, and you mentioned it earlier, but I just wanted to point it out again, looking at that chart in the NBC News article, all of the major social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, X, are down, which I found surprising. You pointed out TikTok, but I thought even though it would be maybe stifled, I thought it'd be slightly up. Same with Instagram. I thought that'd be slightly up. I don't hear much about Snapchat anymore, so that didn't surprise me too much.
It's interesting because I was listening to, I think it was NPR or somewhere this week.
Yeah.
It may have been Apple News. I forget which one. But they were talking about how both political parties, they understand that this year people are purposely staying away from certain things, like traditional media and social media when it comes to political messaging. And this has led, I believe, at least, I think the Democrats are doing this, where they're actually working on an app that will let people basically blast out little snippets of information to their friends,
right,
about what's going on. So the idea there is, if you have someone who is a fairly strong believer in the cause, and they've got friends who they know are avoiding social media and avoiding right. traditional media, it's, right. Hey, you know, here's some information on climate change, or here's some information on whatever. Here's some information on this and that, that you can trust, and of course is what that political party wants you to see. So
right.
I find it sort of interesting. I also wonder if this year the war of politics will not just be fought with people sending things to each other, but if some of the centrist areas or things like Ground News and such, if they're going to see some surge in popularity of people who are just saying, I don't want to go to any media that I sort of knew about. I know about their agenda already. Let me find media forms that I don't know about their agenda yet and go to those. So we'll see. Again, election year, very interesting to watch.
You know, John, we may have to actually start publicly publishing our super secret conspiracy views. We should we should pivot it a little, saying conspiracy views for non-conspiracists.
Well, you know, conspiracy views are not just for conspiracy theorists anymore.
Yeah.
They've gone mainstream.
Yeah, so we would not be unusual. But, you know, we could do the fun stuff like aliens from outer space have landed and, you know, dinosaurs discovered on remote island. Fun stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's no problem with that. It'll be a nice distraction of the other stuff that's going on, you know.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. Well, today was kind of a ranty kind of day, wasn't it? Looking at our show notes, complaining about podcasting, which is very, very meta topic, and some gadget problems. And of course, Google Podcasts end of lifing in less than a month now. Shoot, less than 2 weeks. Ah, well. Okay, so coming up, I've got some fun gadgets I'm reviewing that I'll mention. More generically than specifically sometimes, but I've got some fun looking higher end wireless lavaliers coming in. So I reached out to Paul Lawler, who's been on our podcast many times, and we'll see if we can get together for lunch or something and test out those things. I've got like three to test, one in, two coming. Oh, I will note one thing, John, since you may have students interested in it. So I just finished testing a standalone voice recorder. You know, old school, like you've probably seen them when you were a student, except in those days they're probably tape, little tape recorders that you would put in front of your professor's desk. And I never did it because I didn't want to listen to my professors twice. no offense, John. But I know a lot of people did. They'd put a little tape recorder. Professor, can I put this up here and record you? Sure you can, you know, and do that. Anyway, this is, I think, less than $50. It comes with a 64 gigabyte micro SD card. Yeah, micro SD card. And the sound quality is pretty darn good. The only thing is, for podcasting, is you can't handle it. You need to put it on a surface, on a stable surface, that hopefully nobody's going to tap or hit. And it does a pretty darn good job of recording, you know, from a couple of feet away. I was really shocked. And in fact, with noise reduction turned on, I took it outside in like a 30 mile an hour wind. And it did a credible job of recording a pretty decent quality sound for a very inexpensive device. So modern digital standalone voice recorders, amazing. And it outputs WAV files. So you plug in the USB cable, which is also how you charge it. Plug it into your PC or Mac, and you can, you know, download the files. Really, really, really handy. I'm still thinking I might be able to use it as a backup for in-person podcasting. So what I think I'll do is I'll put it on the table and start that as a backup in case the labs fail during the podcast. So fun stuff. Alrighty, this has been MobileViews Podcast 503. Thanks for John for humoring me and testing Descript / Squadcast prior to recording this. I may publish part of it as part of this podcast, although a lot of it is me grumbling like, how does this thing work, which is on the recording. Thanks, John. We'll talk to you later.